Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We've been in a series that is kind of subtitled The Mire. People are often returning to the mire, the dog to the vomit, the pig to the mire. And of course, that is really just kind of a colorful way of saying that if you do not learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And so we see an election year coming up, and everybody is vying for office, and really what you're watching is the dance of the dialectic, that you have two opposing sides that are not really all that different. Both of them are advocating the real adversary of liberty, which is collectivism, which is what we discussed in the last show. And collectivism is, at least as people like Griffin was explaining, we have a website we just put up. It has an hour and a half video on it, put together by Griffin. And he kind of goes into collectivism, and he has a fairly good perspective on things. We take things a little bit farther and show you. You know, actually, he actually has a webpage. We even link to it on our Preparing You site, so you can go to Preparing You and look up criticism or collectivism, and you can see that. Chances are it'll still be there, even if this is archived audio away. But the idea of collectivism is this idea that we all become this corporate body, and we elect some leader, ruler, king, prime minister, president who will exercise authority. And maybe we elect a couple of guys, and or they pick judges, and the judges tell us what is good and evil. And if they decide that it's good to do this and it's evil to do that, you can't do that anymore. And you have to do this, which they say is good. And that may mean that you have to invade a country or, you know, kill some group of people that is supposed to be detrimental. You know, they get to decide good and evil. You've given them the power because you didn't exercise the responsibility. And usually it doesn't start out where you give them the power to decide how much you're going to pay in taxes or whatever it is. It starts out with they offer you benefits, and then you take some of those benefits. Or they say, oh, we'll do that for you. You don't have to do that. I actually remember somebody had a job where I worked, and they were trying pretty good, but it ended up that they were getting submarined by some of the other employees who would run up and do their job for them. And then later on, after that, you know, when they were new there, they would have these people run up and do their job for them, and then they didn't know exactly what everything they were supposed to do. And then before you know it, a week or so out, they're passing complaints that, well, she doesn't do her job here, or she doesn't do her job there. And, well, she would have, but she thought she got out of the habit of doing it because these people just jumped in and did it for her. And they didn't say, you know, well, this is what you should do, and this is how you do it, and I'll help you this time, but next time you take care of it yourself. They were actually undermining her learning the whole job. And then they started complaining about it. And fortunately, I kind of saw what was going on. I was kind of surprised by it. But then I got her aside and I explained to her. I said, that's your job. That what she's doing, that's your job. And that's your job. And you're letting her do it. And so now she's complaining about it. And she, well, I didn't know. Well, I'm just telling you what's happening here. So anyway, she quickly got into the swing of things, and then eventually was all accepted and everybody was happy. But why were they doing that? Well, jealousy, envy, maybe some other strange, bizarre, underlying spiritual issues. But the fact is, that's what they were doing. They didn't normally do that with everybody, but they were certainly doing that with her. So, back to our election year. and the leaders. They've been doing a lot of things for us. I mean, in early America, all the schools were private schools. Even the public schools were privately funded. They just kind of privately funded them and put them on public land. But they were funded by private individuals who paid the faculty and paid the light bill, whatever it was, coal oil probably then. But you could get a free education even then if you didn't have the money to go to Harvard, as they would pay your tuition. People would. Individuals, charity. We used to do that all the time. Healthcare, welfare, everything was taken care of by free will offerings. That's when America got to be a great nation, during this period. This is the innovations, and everything came along during this period where we were operating really by faith, hope, and charity. That's what was making America great, not the Constitution. Most of the people didn't like the Constitution. And it really didn't have too much to do with the average everyday workings of society. It does today. It does today because of the contract clause. You guys have all said, well, you know, we would like to have free education. Oh, sure, we'll arrange free education for you. Oh, yeah, sure, we'll arrange free Social Security for your parents so you don't have to, take care of your parents. Oh, we'll take care of welfare. Don't worry about welfare. You don't need that. Privately, and you have to fund that. You guys got enough to do. We'll do that for you. The greatest destroyers of liberty are the gifts, gratuities, and benefits. That's what destroys society. And it's through your covetousness of that, sitting and eating with those rulers, those benefactors who exercise authority, that has brought you back into the mire, into bondage. So the only way out is to change your thinking and get back the other way. So anyway, we talked earlier today on earlier shows about, if you put a list of all the kinds of government on the right side, and on the left side, you put the word republic, and you were supposed to draw a line to every type of government that was similar in essentials to a republic. So you got democracy, indirect democracy, communism, socialism, all these different types of government. Some are complete and some are kind of partial. But there, you've got this list over there. And the only word that you could really draw to, if you had a republic on the left that would be similar to a republic, is an anarchy. And now immediately everybody who hasn't heard that this morning and the explanation went along with it, they think, well, that's crazy. Anarchy and republic, there's no similarity whatsoever. In actuality, they are almost identical in essentials. The essentials of a republic, based on the original definition of the idea of republic. I'm not talking about the redefinitions that have come along in the last 200 years. But go back 200 years to the time of the Constitution being written, and you'll find that a republic was separate from the state. The government was separate from the state. State of what? State of the people. The people were separate from the government. All the power of government rested still in the people, but the government itself was separate from the people. So how does that work? Well, there's another element, that all the leaders in a republic, in the original concept of a republic, are titular. Now, there's Plato's Republic, but that's actually a drifting derivation of the original republic. The original republic, as the word comes down to us through Liber Res Publica, and Tacitus talks about this. Even at that late stage in the Republic, he believed was virtually dead, that people were still wanting to get back to the Republic, just like people want to get back to the Constitution of the United States. Oh, we got to get back to the Constitution. They're straying from the Constitution. They're not straying as far as you think. Because of this contract clause, they have a lot more power than they used to have. Because of your covetousness, they have a lot more power than they used to have. And we explain that. Where if you say, you give me $100 and I will work for you tomorrow, then you take that $100, you spend it. Now you have to work for them tomorrow. You say, well, I have a right to my labor. Well, not for tomorrow. Tomorrow you got to work for them. Well, what happened if the deal is not just tomorrow, but the next year and the next year and the next year and the next year, and until you pay the debt off, and it's so big that you can't even pay the debt off? Well, then you have to work forever. You're a slave forever because you went into debt. And now people got a lot of rationalizing that they want to do. Well, I'm not really debt. They didn't really loan me anything. You know, there's guys who actually say, I don't have to pay the bank back because they never loaned me anything. You're living in a house that you built with that borrowed nothing. You know, you're driving a tractor you bought with that borrowed nothing. You now say you don't have to pay back. You got a real tractor which represents real value. So you did get something. You didn't give anything for it, but you what you did is you bought it with tomorrow's labor. Because you're a beneficiary of this mammon trust, this gigantic trust. You're a beneficiary. And because you're a beneficiary, when the trust goes bankrupt, you're a surety. Whoa, bummer, right? So you're a surety for the debt because you're a beneficiary of the debt. You know, of the benefits. And therefore, the only thing that you're getting out of this gigantic trust, this mammon, but that's what mammon means, entrusted wealth, is debt, which you're a surety for. So anyway, in a republic, the leaders are titular in name only. The United States Constitution, now I want you to write this down because this is going to go against everything everybody tells you and you hear it over and over again. It's one of those great campaign deals that keep getting into people's heads and they think that the Constitution created a republic. Where does it say that? Benjamin Franklin didn't even tell you that. They asked you what kind of government they got and he says, well, you have a republic. How long can you keep it? Well, you can just read the Constitution and you realize that the president and the congressmen and the senators are not titular. They have power. They didn't have much power over the people, at least not then, because you didn't have all these contracts with them. But they had power, exercising authority over a lot of things. Not much over the people, but of course the people weren't even a party to the Constitution at first. They didn't become a party to it till later when they started applying for all those benefits as citizens of the United States instead of state citizens. And we went through that. Well, on the application to purchase a gun in Oregon, they ask you if you've ever denied your federal citizenship, and they also ask you if you've ever denied your state of Oregon citizenship. Well, the fact is you can deny that in many different ways. You can formally deny it, but then you can look, as long as you look to government to solve your problems, you will always suffer tyranny. Well, most of your problems are solved by federal government. State government does solve some problems for you, and you look for those state benefits. You know, maybe it's, I don't know if WIC is a federal program or what, but I know there's Oregon Health Plan, there's a program. And if you're looking to that, then they're going to have a certain amount of power over you. But the state governments are all run by people who are doing all kinds of revenue sharing with the federal government. So states aren't as sovereign as they used to be anyway, so it doesn't really make much difference. So anyway, point is, these we can go through all these layers and layers and layers and layers, and we will see how there's all these nexuses, these things that tie you to these regimes that have control over you, over your land, over your labor, over your children. And there's really not a lot you can do about it legislatively. So therefore, you can go vote all you want. It's not really going to change a great deal. I mean, it's fine because you might get somebody in there who's a little less, you know, going down this road to Roman destruction. But you're still going down that road because both parties are into the collective. They're not interested in the individual freedom. Some are not quite as quickly to go towards that collective, But they're all going that way. Even the libertarians aren't far from that. One of the things that libertarians and all of them are doing is they're looking for a political solution. And that's one of the things that Griffin. One of the things that he was talking about was Edward Griffin was this individualism, but he also was talking where they were putting together this idea that and they started something called Freedom Force International. And the idea was people had to start taking back their responsibilities. Well, we're showing people how to do that in Gangbusters. Now, you don't have to do anything, or you can do something, but that's what Christ was doing. That's what John the Baptist was doing. He's saying you had to start taking care of one another. Stop looking to the government, but look through this intimate network of people who on the ground level where you live had to start caring about you as well as other people. They all had the same agenda of looking for righteousness rather than a political posturing. I was interested in setting the captive free. We'll say you're the captive again. But if you were really doing what Christ said, you'd be halfway there already. But most people are not really doing what Christ said. They're not really doing what Moses said, because Moses was telling the Israelites the same thing when they were in Egypt, because they were in the same kind of bondage. All they had to do is start, and we talked a little bit about some in a recent show. I was on this Friday, and I've already posted to the network. If you're on the Living Network, go to our websites, join the Living Network in your local area. I already posted to them the archive recording of that show, and we got into the spiritual or metaphysical, whatever you want to call it, side of how this works, how you can get deeper insight, not by studying in the tree of knowledge, but by eating of the tree of life. And one of those evidences of eating of the tree of life is to actually start caring about your neighbor as much as you care about yourself. Actually forgiving your neighbor some of his goofy eschatologies or doctrines, and still just trying to work with him as an individual in a way that strengthens him, protects his rights, protects his family, because you have to care about his family as much as you care about your own. And when you have a whole network of people that actually are doing that, instead of just saying, well, I've got my new wife, or I got my wife and my kids, and that's my first responsibility. No, your equal responsibility is your neighbor. That's what it says. You had to love your neighbor as yourself. If you love yourself and your family more, you ain't going to make it. Yeah, Christ said you had to love your neighbor as much as yourself and your neighbor's family as much as yourself. And there's a reason why. Any kind of time you fudge and you love your family more, when the chips are really down, you'll abandon everybody else and you'll save your family. And that's going to be the spirit of the other families that you're in congregation with. Birds of the feather will flock together. You'll all betray each other. This is what was so astounding during the Christian conflict, which was basically the Christian conflict, is Christians wouldn't sign up for their welfare. They had their own system. If Christians were doing what the early Christians were doing, they'd all be exempt from Obamacare. And whether they had Obamacare or not would be superfluous. You'd all be exempt. You wouldn't need it. Because you would be doing what the early Christians were doing, which they were actually taking care of one another. And because of that, this mysterious spiritual power began to flow through their society, and people were miraculously healed all the time. And we had a show on Friday where we were talking about that, and even the host was saying, well, yeah, I've noticed that his wife has been in healthcare. And we noticed when the certain people of a certain attitude started to work, take care of one another, healing was much more rapid. And when you had people who were kind of going through the motions and just there for the paycheck, it didn't have the same outcome. Same things didn't have the same outcome. So anyway, you see this you see this pattern developing. We talked about epigenetics and how diseases that are, you know, genetic diseases are actually cured simply by a wet nurse coming in who doesn't have the same genetic problems, changes that individual because of the fact that they bring evidently something physical in the milk that she provides that child, that child suddenly overcomes a genetic defect. It actually goes away and disappears, and science can't figure out why that happens. And that they're suspecting that there's some sort of epigenetic material that comes to the child by way of the milk and then turns on the DNA in the double helix, and the child's own cells heal so that the genetic disorder disappears for them. Astounding. That's actually in accordance with nature. And it's in accordance with the Spirit of God. That if you lay down your life, you will have life more abundant. And like we were talking about the two parallel worlds to our own, one we call, there's actually more according to scientists. It's not me, I didn't say it. The scientist says there are many, many other dimensions that are parallel universes to our own. Now, it may be debated somewhat, but it's a very popular theory amongst mathematicians because they're seeing scientific evidence of the existence of these parallel universes. But if there are, and one was what we call hell and the other one was called heaven, who would be populating hell and what kind of people would it be? One of the questions that came up during the interview with Chuck on this other radio broadcast was, what would, you know, if we came together, what would it look like? So think about that now. If you came together with the character of Christ, what would it look like? What would a society in the kingdom of hell look like? How would that be operating? I mean, you can draw all kinds of pictures based on Hollywood perspective, everybody running around with pitchforks. And there's lots of different variations of that. But the reality is it would be kind of a dog-eat-dog universe, right? An authoritarian universe, maybe something out of Mordor, you know, like in the Two Towers, where you have all these guys, you know, the demons and goblins going around, you know, ruling over, oppressing one another, controlling one another, mocking one another, superiority and oppression. In the other world, what would you have? Cooperation, caring for one another, willing to sacrifice, fearlessness, not oppression, but everybody going out of their way to help each other. So you got this other spirit over here. Now the question is, what side are you most like? Now, of course, everybody wants to think, oh, we're most like heaven. We're pretty good guys. Well, you know, in hell, there's all kinds of coveting what each other have. In heaven, there is no coveting what each other has. So, okay, do you desire benefits at the expense of your neighbor? Well, guess where that would put you between these two worlds? If you saw your neighbor being attacked or killed or murdered or some sort of unrighteous behavior wreaked upon your neighbor, would you run up and risk your own life to save your neighbor? Would you? Because if you wouldn't, guess what side of the equation that puts you on? Okay, well, let's take a look at some other things that might put you on the bad side of the equation. Are you selfish at all with what you have? Now, you may not, you say, well, I don't want to covet my neighbor's goods. I don't want to take anything away from my neighbor. I will take care of myself. Do you covet what you have? Are you selfish with what you have? Are you generous to a fault with what you have? Which way is it? Because if you're not generous to a fault, then you're not going on this side. You're going to go back over to that dark side. Now, you can tell me you believe in Jesus, but if you believe in Jesus, wouldn't you be generous to a fault? Because Jesus was generous unto death. Wow. Oh, I just have to believe in him. I don't have to be like him. But that's not what he calls belief. If you love me, believe me, love me, you will keep my commandments. Wouldn't you be like him? Or are you just in love with the idea of being in love with Jesus? Wow. Bummer, huh? So anyway, we're going to take a break here in a little bit. Where should we take this? Where's the next place to go? So that we can see a practical kingdom formulating. And how it would operate. If we came together, what would it look like? We know it wouldn't look like hell. So what would it look like? What would be the good thing? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after this brief break. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back. So we were talking about Griffin, and it kind of got onto Griffin because of the idea of collectivism. And collectivism, the difference between collectivism and individualism is the fact that collectivism has, as we usually use the term collectivism, has this idea of binding the society together in a group, where somebody has an exercising authority, either the majority, or in the case of an indirect democracy, you elect a bunch of lawmakers and Supreme Court justices, and they decide what is good and evil, and you just have to go along with it. You've given them the power to rule over your own conscience, and that's not the way it should be, but that's what you've chosen to do. That's not natural law. That's now a legal system. And that brings you into the bondage of the collective. Now, individualism, as the individual is this denizen, this creature that gets to decide everything for himself. Now, if he enters into a contract with his spouse, and now they become as if one person. So that's your first corporation. Two or more people gather together for a particular purpose as if they were one person. That's a corporation. So the first marriage was the first corporation, the corpus of the family. And so anyway, that corpus that we call family, we don't call it a corporation because this corporation now term has a kind of a civil nature to it. But the Constitution itself created a corporation, you know, it created two or more people acting together as if it was one person, the United States of America. And it was gathered with, this is the way it always is with a corporation, under a pre-existing authority. In holy matrimony, the pre-existing authority is God. He's the only one who has an exercising authority over your union, which makes you pretty free under natural law, because it's the God of nature and nature's God. So that now you have a free union between you and your spouse. And the products of that union belong to you. But now if you go and get a marriage license under a state, and then you get, or even if you make a contract and you file it with the state, now you may go under a civil authority. And they will be the ruling judges. They will make determinations for you. You know, like if one of you decides you want to have a divorce and the other one doesn't, well, they can go to this third party you've made the agreement underneath, and they can grant you a divorce. and they can divide your assets. And they can make you do things their way. Because they're a party to the contract. And with many people, that's the way it should be, because they don't have enough moral character to resolve these issues in a righteous way. And there is no, it used to be that society would, you know, you would be dependent upon society, so that if you were not doing right by your family, all society around you would know. And they might hold you accountable. They might say, well, you know, I don't want to do business with somebody who treats his wife that way. And so you're out. But in our modern civil society today, we're under the authority of these legislators who change the terms of our marriage as we go. You know, one day this is okay, this is okay, this is not okay. And then suddenly, you know, a year later, they pass new laws, and now that's not okay, and this is okay. And it's different than it was when you got married. And they can change the terms of your union because they have a vested interest in it. And that's not natural law. That's a legal system. And they do this with all kinds of things. But anyway, so you have this this connection with society where it can exercise a certain amount of authority over you. And so I know I was pointing out, that we really have gone into this mire because of our covetousness and our own sloth, and our, you know, that's what it says, the slothful shall be under tribute. And so therefore you come into this bondage through that means. Not because of fraud, because they've actually published everything. They told you what you were doing. I mean, even if you go back to 1872 and asked Horace Greeley, what do you think, Horace? Have they freed, 4 million slaves? And he said, we have stricken the shackles from 4 million human beings and brought all laborers to a common level. Not so much by the elevation of the former slaves, as by practically reducing the whole working population, white and black, to a condition of serfdom. While boasting of our noble deeds, we are careful to conceal the ugly fact that by our iniquitous money system, we have nationalized a system of oppression, which, though more refined, is not less cruel than the old system of chattel slavery. And this was way back in 1872. He could see that because it was debt with the war, and they were using these U.S. government notes and everything. There had been no Federal Reserve yet, but that was coming. And, you know, when they were about to pass the Federal Reserve, Lindbergh Sr. said, this is going to create the largest trust in the history of the world. The money powers would soon, he just goes on and on, that it would destroy the nation, destroy liberty. He explained it. He passed it anyway. Is it illegal? No, it's legal. Could you have stopped it? Well, the legislature evidently wasn't going to stop it, but you could have stopped it if a third of Americans refused to ever even touch those notes. We don't want those notes. We won't accept them here at this business. They would have gone out of fashion. And the Depression would have been the end of the Federal Reserve, because we would have had enough of some other medium of exchange to use. But they got you addicted, and then they pulled the rug out from underneath you and created a famine in the land. And I'm not blaming them, because any time you guys could have changed and started going this other way. But you don't even know about it then, because by, 1913, by 1910, the majority of the people in the United States were educated in public schools. By 1927, those public schools were getting books from people who wanted to change the way you viewed history. Now they don't even teach history. So there really isn't any fraud because they published everything, and people don't like it when I said they want to have somebody to blame other than themselves. And they think they can prove fraud. And they really can't. I'm not saying that the government doesn't ever do wrong. It certainly does. And does it have bad ideas? Absolutely, it's got bad ideas all the time. It doesn't come from the government. It comes from people in government. And lately, I've seen some horrendous ideas. But that's their ideas. Christ had a great idea. Come together, form a network of people who care about one another. Yeah, a guy the other day was saying that, talking about coining money. It just shows you how easily we get things confused. The federal government can coin money, and it can issue bills of credit and all this kind of stuff, which is not the same as money, but could be used as money. But coining money, what is coining money? You take a silver round and you stamp on it a value. Well, why don't you just stamp on it the weight? Troy ounce, half a troy ounce, quarter of a troy ounce. Whatever that is. Why not just stamp that weight on there and a date and who did the stamping? People will use it or not. And you could even register the stamp, the guy who weighs it and stamps it, so that anybody who copies that would be breaking a copyright, and so he would be making money. All the silversmiths would be making money. They're not coining money. They're just taking weights and measures and saying, well, this is an ounce, this is half an ounce, this is three quarters of an ounce, and there's your money. And you're back on the silver standard. People say, oh, it'd be so inconvenient, you can't use debit cards. You could buy a car with the change in your pocket. Yep, you could buy a car with the change in your pocket. Your pockets might be kind of stuffed, but you could do it. And with the birth of every baby, the silver in your pocket would become more valuable because there would be more demand for it. Today, from the time that the program began till now, the money in your pocket has decreased in value. It has gone down in value. Now, that may change because there'll be certain items or occasionally that will become more valuable simply because of shortages. But generally speaking, that, an ounce of silver hasn't changed its value in thousands of years. Because it's still an ounce of silver. Now, if you stamp on it that it's worth, 45 gherkins, and a gherkin is a made-up value for the country of whatever, or a lu, what was that, Moldova's money, it's worth 20 lu, and you say that, well, now the market is not going to determine its value. In a republic, because the government is only titular, it can't coin money, cannot stamp money with a value. It could make money where it stamped a weight or measure on it, said that all these were stamped here at this weight or measure, and this is what we believe it is. And of course, there can be an adjustment if somebody weighs it and says, it doesn't really weigh that much, some of it's wore away or something, who knows. But we could have adjusted to that money. But today, to make that adjustment back would almost be impossible, and for most of you, it's illegal because the system is already bankrupt. It's against the law to utter something as money. Wow. That's huge. So there really isn't any fraud. There's just our ignorance. We lack knowledge, and we've gone this way. So what does it look like to turn around and go the other way? And we put this together a lot of different ways, but metaphysically, spiritually, what happens, and we talked about it in the last show, about the woman who goes up and touches Christ, and this like energy comes out of Christ and into her and instantly heals her. Well, there were a lot of people who wanted to be healed, and they were touching them. They weren't necessarily healed, but she was. because she was receptive to that spirit that was Christ, the whole spirit that was Christ. And see, this is one of the problems in America today. So we like this about Christ and we like that about Christ, but we don't like this idea that I have to give up my benefits and that I have to become the benefit for my neighbor. I have to be a charitable person. I mean, really charitable, not just, you know, like a couple bucks here and there. You really have to take a good portion of your life and start giving it away. Wow. Bummer. A lot of people don't want to do that. They want this easy Christianity where, you know, I could say, well, I really love my neighbor. I don't actually want to do anything for him. So, you've got this spirit of Christ in a few people. What happened if we had it in, say, what is it, 400 million people in America? 1% of 400 million people is what, 4 million people? 4 million people who actually love their neighbor as themselves, as much as themselves, who care about them as much as themselves. That's just 1%. That would make a huge, gigantic difference. Make it 3%. It's not 100 million or 4 million. I mean, 3% of 4 million, well, 3% of 100 million is a million. Of 4 million, it'd be 4 million. Of 3 times that, it's like 12 million people. That's getting to be a large number of people. And that's going to make a difference. Because they're really dedicated people. And they're spread out all over, but they're linked and networked together. You know, one of the things in the French Underground is that you knew everybody in your cell group, but you didn't know everybody in all the other cell groups. You might know somebody here and somebody there, but you didn't know everybody. So there were certain people that knew suddenly, because you were captured by the Nazis and going to be tortured, that they had to get out of town because they were going to be next. Because you knew they knew who you were and you were going to eventually talk. It happened all the time, every day. It was a clever thing. They just could not nail these guys down. They couldn't stop them. You know, so this mysterious thing where you lay down your life and have life more abundant. We have these other quotes in the Bible. Give and it will be given unto you. It also says forgive so that you will be forgiven. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. With this measure that ye meet, it will be measured unto you again. And more besides. Now the guy who's repeating all these things to me in an email, as ye sow shall ye be reaped. He won't join the network because he is so angry at the apostate church. Anything that mentions the word church, he doesn't want to be a part of. Even though it's very clear that you want to know what the community looks like. It looks like this free assembly of people who actually come together, not to like somebody, you know, on the other side of the country. I live about as far away from this guy. He lives in Washington, D.C., and I live here in Oregon. So why don't you gather with people locally in the Washington, D.C. area? Oh, because they don't, I don't know, he just doesn't do it. So as he gives, so shall he be given. As he decides to, he won't gather together. And so it's going to be meted out with him. If you go back to that decline and fall of the Roman Empire, that was absolutely essential to have this network. You go back to the Nazi occupation of France. This cell group network was absolutely essential for the success of the French Underground. So you have to have this spirit of Christ in the pattern of the French Underground. But it's not really, it wasn't unique to the French Underground. It was, but we did see it there. It was common with people all over the country. Now, what happens if you do this, if you have this network, and every single congregation is a little bit of a seed bank? Now, you know, the New World Order, whatever you want to call them, they have their seed bank up there in Upper Norway. Now, they have others. It's not the only one they have, and it's this big, huge vault. And they have it distanced away. But somebody will know that. That'd be great to make a program, you know, like The Last Ship or whatever. And they go up to steal the seeds out of the vault. Because and somebody else has already got there and stole all the seeds, like the Soviet Union ship going around. Because they knew that it would be valuable things. So they went and stole the seeds right away. And so, but what do you do when it's a network of peoples? You know, 12 million people spread all out over the country and around the world. And each congregation has a little hidden away seed vault that the people in the congregation know where it is. And so you'll lose some, but you'll have this network of resources all over so that you can get started again and resupply people again. Absolutely essential. And it's all run by people who have learned to care about one another. This is what made it so unique. I love to tell the story of one of the first martyrs of Christendom, who was killed by what would be equivalent to the AMA today. I mean, the institution had the same symbol as the AMA does today. And it was the chief medical center in that, it was in Bergamo. And he was a dentist. And just him touching people, leaning over them, like that nursemaid we talked about earlier, somehow or other, it affected people. I mean, he was working on their teeth. But other things began to heal. And this is so essential to understanding how this all works. And to make it work. But it only works for people who will receive that same spirit. Because see, if you come there like Ananias with a selfish heart and angry and everything, it'll kill you. That's the way it works. And that is the full armor of God. And, you know, so again, I was running through some of these things in this email that he sent, and it's the same old thing. He just can't see the kingdom. And so I know that's a real problem with a lot of people, and so you try to figure out ways in which you can describe how this kingdom works. So, okay, we said mentioned every single congregation is a seed bank. And that way you have this resource that's all over the country. Every single congregation, the people are learning certain things about health, certain things about taking care of one another, medicines. It's amazing over the years, so many things that we have learned, you know, because we live a long ways away from doctors and all this kind of stuff. And there's so many things, and we'd like to share them with other people, and that's one of the reasons why we have Preparing You, where people can put up things and share the knowledge they have. But really what we want to do is have these festivals. And we've had them before. They haven't been real big. We need a big organizer. Guys who are really good at organizing, that we have locations that we could do this. But we need to have people that want to come together and learn things. Not only, you know, how to become a seed bank, how to become a seed producer, how to become home health, how do you take care of the elderly so that they thrive, how do you take care of your children so that they thrive, so that no matter what happens, you're creating these bonds. Because see, the kingdom of heaven is a collective too, but it's a collective of the heart. Because we all have the same Christ character of caring about one another, of sacrificing for one another, of being there for one another. And that binds us together, not some sort of contracts, covenants, or some constitution we swear oaths to. Our allegiance is to righteousness and caring for one another. And so all the little things that you can do, like just before we started this particular show, I got in here just like seconds before the music stopped. And but we're in the middle of lambing. We live out in the wilderness. I mean, really out in the wilderness. And so I was bringing in lambs. I've got another one to bring in, but I didn't have time before the radio show started. Granddaughter, you know, we saw a video on the other day where this little three-year-old girl was reaching inside of a ewe, helping turn that lamb to bring it out. And, you know, my granddaughter knows how to do that kind of stuff. She'll be pulling lambs this year. And you know, we have a daughter-in-law coming up who wants to learn butchering. So we actually have a steer set aside so that we will hang that and butcher it. A son who's a knife sharper, so we should have plenty of sharp knives to do this. We've done this. We've done it out in the middle of the wilderness. We know how to do it that way. We've also can bring in, we have people in our extended network. They could come in who are former butchers, and they could, it's amazing how much faster they are than our way. We don't butcher every day, but they are amazing. We can do the same thing. We've got guys learning permaculture. We can bring them here. We can teach you. We have room for, you know, classes of 100, 200 people. We need a little bit more accommodations, but what we need is people working together, getting the word out. Let's learn these things. Let's learn who we can trust, who will be consistent, who will put their hand to the plow and not turn back. It's amazing. People that are very smart, very dedicated, very capable. If things don't go just their way, suddenly they're up and they're going to leave everybody. Well, they may not leave everybody, but they make themselves remote. They don't communicate. We don't know how to be a free society. This is why Israel had to go through the plagues in Egypt. Is they had to begin to learn again what it means and how to be a free society. And it took the plagues to get them sharp enough to begin to go out and be in this inhospitable Sinai for 40 years. They weren't ready to go at first. You're not ready to go. Let's get ready. Let's get together. There's no way I can show you what it looks like to be a network of people who love each other as much as... Because, for one thing, there's no reason to love me because I haven't sacrificed for you. Well, I have. I'm on this radio show. I could be out doing things that would benefit me. But I'm here on this radio show. I was on 2 hours this morning. I was on 2 hours the day before. I put up web pages that show you how this works, how it doesn't work, so that you can start coming together. And this is why we created the Living Network, so you can find people in your local area, so you can actually do this face-to-face, because that's very important. But we're talking kingdom, so we're connecting all those little local networks together. Right now, our mobile ministry is in Florida. I think he's in Tallahassee today. But he'll be in other parts of Florida. He wants to make a good tour of Florida. So let's get together in Florida. You know anybody in Florida? Let's get together and start thinking about other people. Like, how do we get more people into the network? You know, people of a variety of skills. Let's get them in the network so that, you know, because the more the merrier. And then we'll have these retreats in Florida. We got one that somebody wants to have. I can't even remember where they're putting it now. Missouri. Get on the network and talk it up. Get together with all your different skills and everything. Don't bring your divisionary ideas. Bring, it's basic. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love the stranger in your midst. Learn to take care of one another. Help each other have homeschool. I mean, there's going to be a war against homeschooling. There's going to be a war against being armed. There's going to be a war against having, you know, extra food put up. I'm telling you, in other countries, they're actually making people who have two houses share one of their houses with the immigrants. They will be driving people out. It's already happening. You know, Europe is almost lost now. And America is going to be next. Australia is going to be next after that. Canada is not going to be immune. So we need to come together and start caring for one another and learn how such a society works. It's really easy to love your neighbor if you never have to actually roll up your sleeves and work with them. When you start working together, you're going to start rubbing each other wrong. But that's how come iron sharpens iron. You have to come together, start projects, start to learn to one another. So anyway, I encourage everybody to join the Living Network at preparingyou.com. Go there, click on all the network links, join in your local area, start becoming active, ask questions, talk to one another. Nobody's going to bind you except with love. And until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you. God bless. I'm going to go take that other lamb and get it back into the barn. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.